slowly rolling into it and off of corner number four. It's showtime at Skagit Speedway.
Another driver doing double duty tonight out of Marysville, Washington, Triple X Shark, Mount Baker Landscaping, Brent Renz, Premium Services, Scrappy Eco, Triple X, that's the 33, Echo Heath, and he goes to the top of the boards, 11-5-4-1.
It's showtime!
One car with the front of it that was junk, and another car with the back of it was junk, so I cut both of them in half. Took the good part of one car and the good part of the other car and welded them together.
The reason why I decided to move to Sean's home for a user is just because the memory of Sean was his V8. And, I just kind of lived for racing and racing with his number just to remember him by.
Racing, and next thing you know, she's on the flag stand running the skid, doing flag and all my quartermate. I'm like, where did you come from?
Well, welcome back to episode 3 of the On the Gas podcast, presented by Skagit Speedway. Eric List and Blake Anderson back with you for another exhilarating week and a very fun guest and more racing to come too here at Skagit Speedway.
Yeah, busy season is upon us.
Yes.
This week's Hall of Fame weekend.
Goodness,
last week was busy with fireworks. We had a phenomenal crowd for Les Schwab fireworks night and had some new winners. The 360s to start. Trey Starks leads 29 3/4 laps and gets together with a car, kind of a racing deal, and spins out, brings the yellow. Jesse Schlotfeld inherits the lead, and Schlotty picks up his second career 360 sprint car win here at Skagit.
Yeah, and I think for Jesse, too, he was running fast, but he probably wasn't going to catch Trey unless something like that happened. But I still think when you look for what Jesse Schlotfeld has done this year,
it's been fast.
It's a big win for him. He's been fast. He has wins here, and I think a win doesn't fix everything, but a win makes you feel a lot better.
Yeah.
And I think that in a lot of ways can just continue to elevate after, I'm sure he won slightly better at Dirt Cup than what he had. And he's had a couple races. I'm sure he would like to go a different way. I think it's good. And he kind of feels like he maybe stole one a little bit, not to put words in his mouth, but I think it's a good win for Jesse that he got in that situation.
Through the years, I spent a lot of time with Dale Blaney on the road with the All-Stars, and Dale would tell you, you race enough and you're going to win some races like that, and you're going to lose races like that.
It's so racing.
You take them how they come, and Jesse's been fast. Now he's got 410 wins. He picked up a win with NARC. He's got 360 wins here, so he's going to be one to keep an eye on in a couple of weeks. I still think, Trey's going to be tough at Fred Brownfield here. Summer Nationals in a couple of weeks with their 360 Nationals, and Trey's been fast in the 360. That was the first time he's finished outside of the top two this year in the 360. Levi Hillier was second. He's been quick and getting better, and it's been the 360s. Trey's kind of got the stranglehold on things right
he's
now,
had it all
but
year.
it'll be interesting to see how things shake out. Jason Solwald was third. Jason's in the mix every week, and Seth Bergman was the impressive one to me. Didn't get a time trial lap, starts 14th, gets up to 4th.
Yeah, blew a motor, or had to fix a motor. Yep. He was in this week, and now it's going to escape me. They hadn't looked at the motor at the time to see what it was, but had to put a new motor in. It was good to see his return to Skagit Speedway and how well he did. Move up, 10 spots from starting 14th.
And he's here for the sole purpose of getting laps for the 26,000 to win Fred Brownfield Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
360 Nationals presented by Bob's Burgers and Brew, and that's in 2 weeks. And he'll be in a 410 this week, too. He's got a 410 they're going to put under the hood, so that'll be fun to see Seth in a 410 this week at Skagit. But, he was some good laps there. Levi Klatt in the 99 rounds out the top five.
Yeah, and good run there for Klatt, continuing to kind of just build off of what he did during Dirt Cup. But Modifieds are in the house as well. Cole Logan picks up his second win of the year. Jeff Westergaard, Rory Smith rounds out that top three. But what a good drive from Cole Logan. Up five spots after starting sixth.
Yeah, that was his last win. Started on the pole and ran away. This one had to earn it a little bit more. Not bad for a guy that's, I think, at 4 starts now in a Modified. Jeff Westergaard, so impressive.
Oh,
he can drive through the field. And Rory Smith, we're seeing him improve. That's his first career podium at Skagit. So that was neat to see.
The modifieds were fun, and this is where I'll always say the Skagit Speedway modifieds are really fun when they get going and they can get a couple laps because they race really well. There are a lot of talented drivers in that field that when you give them, you know, a couple laps, a majority of their race to get spread out and then find their lines, find their lanes, they'll pick their way through the field. Logan went +5. Westergaard went +6. Kevin Smith went +10. I mean, there's guys that can drive throughout this field.
We've got guys, you mentioned guys that can drive the field all over. You look at Jeff Westgaard's driven a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Kevin Smith has driven about everything here at Skagit Speedway, 410, 360, Sportsman. James Bundy that's in the field, he's got about 100 Sportsman Sprint starts. Adam Holtrip's got a Hornet Track Championship and Hornet wins, and he's trying to get back into victory lane in the modified, which when he does, he's got a couple mod wins, but when he does, this place is going to go explode. Nuts. Yeah. But the modifieds, I'm proud. They're starting to get it figured out and figuring out how to not lean on each other as much, which has been fun because I've long said, like, I love IMCA modifieds.
Yeah,
back home in the Midwest, they put on a heck of a show. At, you know, watch Marshalltown Speedway on Friday nights on Flow Racing. I highly suggest watching that if you're not up at Deming and you're listening or not watching Deming. Give Marshalltown Speedway a watch on a Friday night on Flow Racing because the stock cars and modifieds there are just – it's some of the best racing you'll see in the country, I promise you.
It's amazing to watch because the good modified drivers can lean on each other a little bit. They can beat and bang and rub, but then they come out of it. They might be 4 wide coming out of turn 4, and they hang on to it. You know, I've always liked the big block modifieds. That's what I've always found fun.
Yeah, the big blocks are fun. Sprint cars with the bodies on them.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the Hornets... Look, we had 20 entries with the Hornets and a full invert in the Hornets. Let's go. We had 5 different leaders, I think it was. Howard Voss gets back to victory lane. I think it was his 9th win of his career. And he's a multi-time track champion and a guy that's always kind of in the mix. And good to see Howard get a big win in the Hornet. Tazio Andreasen, podium. How about that? He's one of the nicest guys in the pit area.
Should continue what's been a really healthy top 5 streak for Tazio, I think. Yeah. I'll go and we'll do some double checking. Has yet to finish outside the top 10 and even top 5 yet this season in the IMC Modified.
Or the Hornet.
Oh, and the Hornets. Thank you. I was still...
Wyatt Covert, back-to-back podiums. He's got 2 starts, 2 podiums for Wyatt, so that's been fun to see. He's back in action.
Well, okay.
There's Tazio. A couple, yeah.
He's... Yeah, and 4 features. There's been 2 top 5s. Raven Skogrud.
Yeah, that was his first time outside of the top 5 and top 10.
Yeah.
But Howard Voss kind of has a control on the points. 4 top 10s and 4 top 5s and now a win. One guy that's in the mix now that I expect to be contending for wins, Brian Michelson.
Yeah.
He's back. He had some issues there. Had gotten a car accident, I believe it was. But now he's back. And Brian, in 2 weeks, will go for his 3rd straight Hornet Nationals win that's paying $12.50 to win this year. But Brian's wanted to get back in the car to get laps for that, and he went 5th to 4th. Bubba Peters, impressive, 18th to 5th, plus 13 for Bubba.
No kidding. Yeah, so. That was a good run. Steve Peters talked about him last week. If you haven't heard our episode with Steve Peters, go give that a listen. But, no, I was walking through the pits Saturday. I noticed Brian, and then I saw his car, and I looked at him going, I didn't think he was racing. I walked up and said, are you driving it? Because he had told me, he's like, well, you know, maybe Adam Holtrip, was going to get in the car. So I half expected that's why the car is out. And he's like, nope, I'm driving. It's like, all right, sweet. Welcome back.
Yeah.
And everyone else in the Hornet field should be scared.
In the 360 points, we'll look at their points. Trey's got a pretty commanding lead, 64 points. But then it gets tight. Jason Solwald, 2nd, 64 back. Colton Heath, 3rd, 86 back. Levi Hillier, 4th, 89 back. And Jesse Schlotfeldt rounds out the top 5 in the 360 points. The modified points, Jeff Westergaard, no surprise there, 9 points up. The modified system works a little different. It's 1 point per position. So he's got a 9 position lead essentially on Adam Holtrip.
Okay.
Cole Logan 3rd though, and we talked about his win.
He's
been getting better and better. James Bundy 4th and Roy Smith into the top 5.
Howard Voss, Raven Skogrud, and then Braxton Hausman continue in that top 3. Very similar. Top 3 is what it was last week. Bryce Kolar and Tazio Andreasen round out that top 5.
But look at the battle from 4th to 9th. just 14 points separating fourth to ninth, and you know, a couple points per position. So that's just a couple of positions on the track.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's Kolar 106 back, Tazio his fifth 107 back, Scott Henry and Colin Sims tied for sixth. They're both 111 back. Then Dave Hill 114 back, David Dykstra 120 back.
Yeah.
I mean, the it's next time the Hornets are back is Friday and Saturday mm-hmm. of 2 weeks from now. They're going to be
Cape Pro Auto Hornet Nationals
positions and points at the Cape Pro Auto Hornet Nationals. And that's something with the Cape Pro Auto Hornet Nationals. We also have a pre-race party at Brewcade in Stanwood on July 22nd in a Mario Kart one-on-one tournament. Let's
Blake,
go.
You're going down. Blake Anderson, you're going down.
Some pinball, and then our Bob's party will be on that Thursday, yep. July 24th. So mark those on your calendar. July 22nd, the Hornet Nationals pre-race party on Tuesday down in Stanwood, about a half hour south of the racetrack. Yep. And then Thursday, our Bob's Burgers and Brews Summer Nationals, Fred Brownfield Memorial pre-race party at Bob's,
right there on the Cook Road,
5 minutes south of the racetrack. So an easy one. A lot of our teams stay there. So we hope you can join. We'll have prizes at both of those giveaways and such. So hope you fans can join us there.
And keep an eye on the Facebook and Instagram and Twitter for exact times and more updates on that type of stuff too. Quickly before we get into our guest, Wyatt Covert. That was a nice podium for a guy that had a lot of speed last year. Picks up a podium this year.
Back-to-back podiums.
I told him I think he's going to get there. I think he can get a win at some point. He's been knocking on the door time and time again.
He's been so disappointed every time he hasn't won too, which is he's only got two races under his belt. He'll get one. He's chatting with you, so that's not a bad. You're not a bad guy to chat with. That means he ran on the podium. But yeah, we had a great chat with Colton Heath, multi-time 360 sprint car track champion. 26 career 360 wins. He's got 410 wins here as well. And
I learned a lot from our conversation.
He
little pavement race. Well, tease little pavement stuff.
The master down at Triple X. Yeah. He does a little bit of everything down at Triple X, which is about a half hour south of the racetrack. Yeah. But yeah, we had a great chat with him. Excited for you guys to listen to it.
Well, with that, I think we'll get into our conversation with Colton Heath. All right, so on this week of the On the Gas podcast here at Skagit Speedway, we bring in our next guest, a driver of 360 and a 410 here at Skagit Speedway as well, Colton Heath. Colton, how's it going today?
Oh, that's going good.
Good.
Just another day at the office.
What is the office for you? What's another day at the office?
Well, it kind of changes daily, but I work at Triple X, and it's pretty much sprint car racing stuff all the time.
All right.
And it's an impressive facility, Colton. You kind of walked me through there like a year ago and everything you guys got going on, whether you're building cars, parts coming in, fixing cars. I feel like every day a different curveball gets thrown at you, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it's Saturdays kind of determine what's going to happen for the week. Sometimes, you know, you see a guy that might need his car fixed to make it back out the next week, or, you know, it's always something different, it feels like. But you know, a lot of new cars to get out and just different parts and pieces, and it's a fun job for being a racer.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to weld pipe all day or something like that. It's, you know, welding and working on race cars.
I don't know why it's so funny to me, and I didn't comprehend it when I was little, and I comprehend it more now that Shark Racing Engines is around here. Triple X is around here. I knew Joe's Racing Products, but those were things that I all thought were, you know, back in the Midwest, East Coast. And then to have, you know, big sprint car names like Shark, like Triple X, you guys, I mean, send chassis, I think, everywhere, probably over the world. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But that's kind of just in our backyard.
Yeah. I think right now me and Mel are actually working on cars for Joel Myers to go to off to New Zealand for this off season / their race season. So getting those done so we can get them containered up and get all their stuff shipped over there and, you know, get it there before their season starts, which isn't, you know, actually too far away, you know, but it's always something. We got some one of our Australian dealers. He's here right now. He's running a micro up at Deming for Clay Cup. So he's been in and out, and it's racing all the time.
At what point do you guys at Triple X kind of flip the calendar to say 2026 and start really focusing on the 2026 builds?
It's pretty much right after Knoxville.
Okay.
Okay.
Once everybody gets through Knoxville, that's when it's kind of the the time where everyone starts going, all right, I need, you know, four more for to build this off season, or, you know, we have anywhere guys buy one car to 14 cars at a time. So, you know, it's, you know, there's another order we're working on, 14 cars going to Western Pennsylvania. And there's, you know, there's just another six cars to go out to Macri, because Macri started selling cars and, you know, us runs our stuff. And it's just, I think right now we're only about 80 cars behind right now. So it's not too bad, you know,
light numbers.
Yeah.
Is there ever an off season? Cause it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like it's probably go, go, go 24/7, 365.
Yeah, pretty much. There's never a stop of anything. The only thing that for me is the summer brings to where I don't have to work on Saturdays because I'm racing. Yeah. Like basically the winter time, you know, it's almost, you know, it's either 6-7 days a week during the winter, and it's, you know, always, you know, like right now I'm, it's like, well, you know, speed week would be fun to do for the 360, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, I got a lot of stuff that needs to get done out the door, and it's, you know, it's just a lot of, it's hard to take time off. I used to midget race in the winter, which was like November when like USAC came. Yep. And it was like, that was super fun to do, but I was gone for 2 weeks. And then I came back and I'm 3 months behind, it felt like, you know, and it's like, no, this isn't working out too good for me.
How did you get involved at Triple X? I mean, now I kind of, when I think of Triple X, you're kind of the guy I think of.
Yeah. So I've been here a little over 18 years now. And I basically, right out of school, like I happened to be with Seth Bergman at the time. Like me and him grew up together, have been best friends. And he was like, hey, I'm going up to Rocket to get my seat welded. And I was like, oh, I'm not doing nothing, I'll go with you. And at the time, Triple X just bought Rocket. And it was kind of at a time where they kind of needed more help and more hands to kind of do both sides of things. And I kind of welded a little bit before, just with that. I had like an afternoon or after school job that was a fab weld shop kind of deal. And they, I'd stay late a couple times and try and practice welding and stuff like that, but never thought that that's the route I was going to go. But then, I just showed up with Bergman and John Farrell at the time was working there, and Mel was there, and they, you know, hey, can you weld? And I'm like, Yeah, of course I can. You know, not really thinking anything of it, and laid down a weld, and John's like, hey man, you need to be here Monday, and I was like, okay, and then pretty much been there since.
There we go.
So in my adult life, it's my only job I've ever really had in my adult life.
What do you specifically do for him?
So basically, I'm the only welder. Oh. So I do all the welding stuff, and then a little fab stuff here, and you know, just a little bit of everything. Do a little sales, do a little bit of shipping, do a little bit of, you know, when the CNC's not running, if that needs to get running, you know, it's just, you know, kind of all of us around here kind of have our, you know, this is what we need to get done now, so like, let's just do that. So
okay,
it's impressive. It's,
I'm surprised you're the only welder if you've got, you know,
yeah, I definitely could use another one.
All right.
Yeah. There, yeah, you know, it definitely.
I don't know, yeah, how to weld.
Yeah, we're definitely at the point now where it's like, you know, I need to. I deal a lot with, like, deal with our teams and all these, you know, people on the phone nowadays, you know, that I spend, you know, probably half my day on the phone, to where it's like, now I need somebody that could just sit down and weld and not be distracted, mm-hmm, like all the distractions, mm-hmm, I get and stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, it's I would be the guy that's like, oh God, you're not doing that right. Just watch out. Let me do it. Yeah. So, you know, so I got to figure out how to let that go a little bit too.
It's quality control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for letting us be your distraction for today, but let's kind of talk about how you've been racing this year. Where do you see this season at so far?
I would say like, it's all right. Like, yeah, the, you know, I think I haven't won a 360 race at Skagit in like 2 years. So that kind of pisses me off a little bit, but you know, like we're also pretty good, you know, it's like I'm good enough to run top five, not good enough to win right now. And mm-hmm, it's, you know, it's just little things, you know, I think just the track changed a little bit and the tires changed a little bit. And I've just haven't got to that where I feel like I could really contend with the win. I think I started on the pole three times this year and haven't won. So, you know, obviously I need to get a little bit better in that department. You know, we have the speed and stuff like that. You know, I think we've ran top five every race we've been this year. except for last weekend. I broke a steering gear last weekend, broke the case. So that wasn't very fun, but the 360 side of good, it's good. You know, we qualify good, we run good, and it's just, you know, can't get that final top step. Mm-hmm. So we got a little work to do there. It's only the next time I think we run 360s is the biggest one. So I better figure it out pretty quick. But then the 410, I feel like I'm not very good in it in a roundabout way as far as being, I would say, almost super comfortable, kind of knowing just like with the 360, I've done it so long that it's kind of like, hey, this is kind of what I'm going to do, you know, this and that. Where the 410 is a kind of a new animal to me. Hmm. And it's, you know, just do this because this is what I do with my 360. Well, that don't work, you know? So it's just like little things, you know, it's like the best help for me this year was running Dirt Cup. It gave me three nights in a row to kind of run and just focus on that and change some stuff around to where then obviously Saturday went pretty good for us. So it's just a learning thing with that. I used to run 410s back in 08, 09, 2010, kind of around that time. And it's just so much, you know, I think my 360 has as much power as the 410s did at that time. So it's just a different animal for me and just learning the right and wrong things to do with it.
What's that been like getting back in a 410, especially, you know, you're driving for Mike and Leah Brown, and I've spent a little time up at the shop in the off season and watched you guys. You've really had to build this team from the ground up and to get that team going. What's that been like this off season?
It's definitely something that I would have never done, you know, as far as, you know, we were kind of capped out, maxed out with what the 33 car was going to be able to do. And, you know, we were going to run 360s and that's just what it was. And then Mike comes along and, you know, needed some help and stuff like that. So it was, he had a bunch of stuff, but all the stuff was kind of mismatched, different stuff that, you know, when in a roundabout way, you know, when you tear stuff up and you got to put stuff back together, mm-hmm. you want that to be the same as what you just took off. You know, you don't want to be like, oh, hey, well, this is going on, so we need to, you know, put this on or yeah. grab that out the trailer because this is this. And, you know, so it's been fun, you know, building Mike's team up and building all the stuff to get where we can just go run, race, and if something does happen, we just pop something on and it's good to go, ready to go again. So, but it's been a lot of work with that and you know, working with Mike on trying to get him better and more laps. And, you know, it's really hard for him to come from Alaska to come down and race. Yeah. So it's, you know, basically every Friday we have a, you know, I always call it team meeting of, all right, are you actually coming this week? Or
that's my question every Friday. Is Mike going to be here this week? Or
yeah, because we never know until about basically Friday. So
sometimes he just shows up.
Yep. Yeah. Last week, actually, I think he landed in Bellingham at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, I think that sounds about
so,
right.
Yep. So yeah, we had to get the truck trailer to the track and have everything all ready so he could just roll in.
Because last week was like, well, is JY going to have to hot lap the car and yeah. do motor heat because Mike's stuck in a layover in Seattle?
Oh, is that where he was stuck?
Yeah, he got delayed in Seattle, and he was like, dude, does Mike rent a car? Mike's Ubered from SeaTac, so.
Oh, God, I mean, it's got to be a long Uber.
He's expensive. Yeah,
and then earlier that morning, we took his rig that he has for when he's down here up to the Bellingham airport. So it was sitting in the parking lot waiting for him. And then it was like, oh, now we're going to have that stuck up there. Mike's not coming from this, you know, so we have a little bit of extra logistical stuff that, to get to the track and things like that. But
especially, I mean, it's like the clamp it's rolling in when the nights we run the 360s and 410s together and the sporties and everything. It's just like, you guys are pulling in on every trailer flatbed you can find, whether, you know, here comes the routine car, here comes Colton's cars, here comes Mike's cars. It's fun to watch.
Yeah it's we do quite a bit of racing out of that shop there.
Yes, you guys do.
So you had mentioned you kind of were helping Mike in some of that 410. What was really the process of you two linking together and saying, hey, you know, Mike, well, can I be in a car? Did Mike just kind of offer to you to drive the 410?
So like it happened, I think it was a little over 2 years when he first kind of came down. I just happened to be pitted next to him one day and they kind of had some problems and they needed some stuff. And I was kind of making fun of him because his trailer was so big and he didn't have the piece that he needed. And I had my little trailer and I was like, here you go, you know, like we'll fix this. Or, you know, it was just something, it was something like that, that just kind of got us to talking and just happened to be pitted next to each other that night. And then, you know, it was kind of, he needed some stuff, some work done on his cars and this and that. And everyone's like, oh, well, you have a triple X, you know, you need to go see Colton. And so it kind of started the relationship that way. And then it was always hard for him to have, you know, he can't quite hire a full-time guy that's solely committed to, to working on his stuff all the time. You know, it's like, we can get a part-time guy in here that can help here and there. And, because of a schedule of not knowing when you're going to actually, you know, if you knew you were going to be here every weekend, you know, it's, we could do things a little different, but it's not that way. So we, you know, it was all right, hey, I'll help you out. You know? So I started, you know, he got his new shop and started coming up and helping a little bit. And, you know, Matt Dines was helping and all these guys were helping, but it's kind of, you know, they got their own programs to worry about, that it was just a lot for them to have to, you know, always worry about Mike's stuff. So, so now I got a guy, Dan, that helps me, kind of goes, you know, either car, 33 are the one cars.
He reports to you.
You know, and it's like, you know, we always just kind of have a game plan. You know, he's way more of a planner than I am. You know, I'm kind of, you know, it's 2:30 in the afternoon. Let's figure out what we're going to do tonight. And Dan's ready to figure out what we're doing this week. So it's enough to get going and keep it going and maintain everything and keep racing. And it's so it just, how it worked out was just kind of, you know, he needed help and we were there to be able to help him. And then, you know, we acquired some more extra, you know, kind of more motors this off season and had some stuff. And so then Mike's like, yeah, you should run one, you know? And I'm like, well, I'm not going to turn that down. So now, just I think I'm 5 races in now with this car and didn't ever expect it to run Dirt Cup as well as we did. And, you know, just kind of keep working on getting better.
How neat was, I mean, I think last year you provided one of the cooler storylines of the season. Justin Youngquist unfortunately breaks his back and you hop in to substitute for him in Matt and Lisa Dines 95. Lisa's battling cancer. You know, we work with Lisa every day and saw the battle firsthand, and she's battling cancer. You get in the car for the first time and park it in victory lane, get their first win. You're back in victory lane in a 410. How neat was that night?
Oh, it was awesome. It was one of those, you know, when Matt called me and talked to me about it, it was like, oh yeah, you know, I can do this. I can run 410. You know, I'd never really, it'd been at least 12, 13 years since I ran a 410, and you know, where I legitimately sat in the car, got my seat in it, and kind of was really gonna be able to go after running good, feeling comfortable. I've hopped in a couple guys' cars because situations happen, but this was the first time where I was like, all right, you know, I had a couple weeks to get my seat in, kind of talk to things and work on things with Matt, and then to go out and, you know, first thing was like, we went quick time and hot laps, and it was like, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, holy crap, this thing's fast. Like, this is way faster than I thought it was, you know? And so then it was like, all right, you know, and I think we went out like fairly towards the end of qualifying and we went quick time, and it was like, oh, okay, you know, this is, you know, Matt's trying to, well, what do you think the car needs? And I'm like, the car's fast. I'm just trying to catch up to it. So that went really well, and we actually won our heat that night and was able to start on the pole. And, you know, that probably helped me out a bunch too, being out front in that scenario and was able to get the win that night. And definitely something I didn't think was going to happen for sure the first night. You know, you always have that like, well, I can win, you know, I can do this. But the first night to be as good as it was and for all the things that were happening to be in victory lane with Lisa and Justin in his back brace and all these, you know, it was quite the situation.
How important is it to be comfortable in a car? Because I think sometimes there's a thought where, you know, okay, there's got pedals, there's a seat, you know, anyone can kind of jump in and drive anyone's car, but that's really not the case. How much prep was there for you to be able to get in a car that, you know, was set up for Justin?
You know, it's a lot, you know, it's just like, you know, I would say now that I've done the, you know, I've been sprint car racing for 20 years now. When I first started doing it, it was like, if it had a seat and pedals in it, I was just going to figure it out. You know, you just hop in it and, like, you know, don't matter. Now that I've done it for so long, it's kind of, I'm super accustomed to where the steering wheel is, mm-hmm. where the heat, you know, if I have a heel block here, where it is, the pedals, all those things make such a difference for me now that, you know, it was nice to be able to go to the shop, spend a week of like, all right, this is the angle I want. This is the seat angle, the steering wheel angle, the throttle, the, all of those things that really allowed me to be able to go into the night, like not worrying about anything like that.
Yeah. That's a lot of things that people don't factor in. Cause I think a lot of people sit there and think, like, you know, Eric had mentioned, can you get in the car and just go, or how do you like things? And I think a seasoned driver like you, as you mentioned, you probably found that spot 20 years of how things to get you comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause there was one, I think it was like, it might have been the first 410 Dirt Cup. It was either 2 years ago, 2 years ago or 3 years. I can't remember. Anyways, the Brock Lemley ran Thursday, and then Friday had some situation where he got bit by a dog.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And this is like 5 o'clock in the afternoon of Dirt Cup, right? And he comes up and he's like, hey, man, I need you to drive my car today. And I'm like, I don't have nothing. I don't have no suits. I don't have no helmets. I ain't got my seat. I don't have nothing. I'm there helping Mike, or I think I was helping Mike, or I can't remember what I was doing. I was there. And he's like, well, I need you to run it. And, well, I borrow a suit from someone, a helmet from, I think Tyler Thompson was next to us. You know, it's like I borrowed all this stuff and got all, and then we're sitting in the car, and how I'm positioned in the car isn't very comfortable for me. So it's like, you know, okay, well, like we should, you know, change this seat or do, you know, so we changed some stuff. But it's just when you're thrown in that situation, especially for me now, I just can't, I'm not super comfortable with like, you know, so then you're like, okay, now don't go out here and do something stupid and destroy Brock's stuff. You know, if Brock destroys Brock's stuff, that's Brock. You know what I mean?
I completely forgot about that.
I did too. I don't know if I actually even knew about that.
Well, it was easy to forget. I was like 74th in the B main.
I remember that. I can't put my I can't put my thumb on what year it was. It would have been 2023.
Okay.
Yeah, it would have been the years we went back to a 410 because I came out and announced Dirt Cup those first couple years.
Yeah.
I forgot about that though. So
it's one of those like, you know, yeah, I got, you know, guys are like, oh, you ran 410 then. It's like, well, I kind of did. I wouldn't say that I was out there actually like putting a,
made an appearance.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just to help fill the field a little bit.
You mentioned it, you know, the power difference from 15 years ago. How much different is that feel from say a 410 when you were running it weekly here at Skagit in 2008, 2009, 2010 to 2025? Is it just a complete different animal at this point in time?
I feel so. You know, I would say maybe there was guys that had better motors when I was doing it type thing.
Okay.
You know, basically I really only ran like dash 12 headed 410s. You know, there was all pro stuff out there and there was guys with stuff, bigger motors. But, you know, we with our dash 12 stuff, it was like we still felt like we kind of competed. I think there was one time I was quick time at a Dirt Cup with an older motor, you know, and it's not that the feel's still kind of the same. It's light on the front end. The steering's light, you know, it gets on the back tires harder and it, you know, and it just pulls the whole straightaway a lot harder. Now I feel like what I would say struggle with or the adaptive part I got to get better at is just the, you know, I get it to where I get the drive good, but then I fly the nose, then I get the nose low to where I'm not, then I'm just spinning the rear tire. You know, it's that, I feel like the window that I need to be in for that, for me to be comfortable, is a lot smaller than it was back when I raced before.
Okay.
Also, at the same time, I think, you know, the clay is different. The track's a little different. I think a lot of the years that I ran 410 before, it was pretty heavy most of the time. So it was just, you put your foot down and, you know, let it eat and you just figured it out then. And I also had, you know, veteran guys like Leo Voigt was my crew chief for all those years, basically. You know, stuff like that, to where I didn't do as much of the setup stuff. I knew kind of what we were doing, but not as much, to where now it's a, you know, kind of 100% on me on what, you know, what I feel that we need to do, plus what my guys are seeing. And it's just I wouldn't say the motor runs like this crazy amount harder. It just pulls so much harder down the straightaway. and almost puts its like more grip into the car because of how the motor runs. Where before it was just like it ran really hard, and that was like what a 410 was. Now I feel like the drivability, you know, they're making so much power now, and getting the drivability to be so good with that much power is like the key to 410 racing. That guys, you know, when guys are really good, it's they got motors that just don't do the wrong things.
Yep. Yeah. I kind of want to look back that you mentioned, you know, it's about 20 years. How did Colton Heath get a start in racing and kind of start in sprint car racing?
Well, I started racing when I was like 4 or 5, doing quads and quarter midgets, go-kart, stuff like that. Then I went to Deming and ran Deming for, I think like 2 or 3 years, where that's, you know, we were there every Friday doing it. And then when I turned, I think at the time I had to be 16. So when I turned 16, I started sportsman racing, and then did sportsman racing and got into it that way.
Okay. Hmm. And have you done a lot of traveling kind of in that, those younger years, or were you pretty much just between Washington and Grace, or Skagit and Grace Harbor?
Yeah, basically like probably 2005 to 2008 was basically just solely Skagit. I think I maybe went to Elma like once or twice. And then when I started doing in 2008, I drove for Roger Oddman, and Roger Oddman owned it. Leo crew chiefed it, and we ran 410. That was like my first, I would say, like shot of like actually winning a race, you know, okay. Where the car was good, the motor was good, yeah. All that, you know. And I think we won a few races that year, ran like second in the championship and stuff like that. And then I think we went to Gold Cup. I think I put it in like the Outlaw Dash at Elma one year because it took rubber towards the end of qualifying, and I happened to be towards the end of, you know, it was one of those scenarios where it just worked out for you. But yeah. It, you know, I never really traveled a whole lot until in 2011, I tried to own, or it was 2010, I tried to own my own 410. Mm-hmm. And I think I was running like third or fourth at Dirt Cup at the time. And it was like, this was going to be like, all right, now I can like freshen my motor and actually have a little money. It was going to go good. And instead, I blew my motor up, shot the rod out the bottom of it. And my racing dreams kind of fizzled out at that point. And it just happened to be a situation where the 33 car, Jamie Barnes, was driving it at the time.
Oh.
And he just won Dirt Cup in it. I think it might've been the year before. And they had some stuff happen and this and that, and I wasn't doing anything, and I knew the guys, and at the time one of the guys worked at Triple X. I was one of the owners, and the other owner I was really good friends with, and it just happened to work out. So I started driving for them in 2011. So it is 14 years now I've been driving the 33 car.
Wow.
And we started out as kind of a 410 team, and then the 410 stuff started to fizzle out around here. So then we, you know, kind of shift focus to the 360 stuff. And then when we started 360, then it was like, okay, it's going good. You know, and then we started going to, you know, kind of as many places as we could. And, you know, around here, you know, we've been to Montana a few mm-hmm. times. You know, we go to Oregon for the beginning of the year. There's a couple 2-day, 3-day shows that we go to every year. And you know, our main focus is always like the Skagit stuff, you know, with the pay. Can't mm-hmm. beat that. And, you know, and then I go to Tulare. I think I've been there 7 or 8 times now, kind of almost every year. We'll go to Trophy Cup at the end of the year. Try and do as much of it as we can.
Yeah.
What is it about Cottage Grove for you? I mean, that's a place that I've heard your mom, well, we work with your mom, Carla, here at the track.
Yeah.
She, when you were down there, you won at Cottage Grove this year. I remember her saying, Colton just loves Cottage Grove.
Yeah. It's just, I could tell you, I didn't the first handful of times I went there, I was like, this place is dumb. I don't like it. I don't want to come here anymore. You know, spinning out all the time and this and that, but it was just, you know, we just kind of figured some stuff out, and I think more of it was just getting more laps there and stuff. Okay. You know, that where, you know, it just got to where we ran there enough. You know, I was fortunate to win the Marvin one year, and you know, I've had some good races for like the Spring Fling stuff, and it's now to where I feel like I'm comfortable around there. I might not always win there, but like it's always good for us to go there now, instead of like, all right, we're going here, like, let's hopefully we'll run top 10 or something. And that's kind of how it was when we first started, to where now I feel like when we go there, we could contend for a win anytime.
when you go into a new track, and now Cottage Grove, not a new track as much, but you know, sketch like the back of your hand. When you go to a new track, what is your process in trying to figure out and learn that track?
I'm a big believer that I leave my car. My car is always the same, to at least when it comes out the trailer. When it's coming out the trailer, I'm starting the same way. So I kind of know this is what, you know, this is what I feel. This is what, you know, when I'm running Skagit, or, you know, I have this feel. Where if I go and it's like, all right, now we're at Cottage Grove and it rained a little bit, so now it's super heavy, there'll be things I know I need to do to, like, you know, get a little freer. Or if it's like, hey, we're blowing dust, I know the direction we need to go. But as far as like when I unload out the trailer, I'm the same every time, like, to where it helps me when I first go out there and say, like, it's just a situation where I'm going to go out there and the car is the same as how I would start. I would say the biggest thing you got to always not do is drive it like Skagit, because I feel like my muscle memory of racing around Skagit's the same. Like, this is where you turn in. This is where, you know, this is how these things work. You know, like, I remember the first times I went to Elma, I damn near turned into the Uke tire every lap for 30 laps until I figured out that the straightaway is longer. And it's like, you see it and you know it, but it's like
muscle memory.
It was just like, that was things I had to learn. You know, I went to Cottage Grove at first and tried to treat it like it was Skagit and race it like it's Skagit. And it didn't work out well for me. But then being there is like, all right, hey, if I do these things and learn these things and understand how this is working, then it got a lot better.
All right. When you say the same, you want to keep the car the same. Are you referring to when you block it in the shop and kind of put that initial setup in?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I'm same bar, same wheel, same tires. You know, like, it's like, you know, I'm the same every time. You know, probably sometimes it might hurt me because I started wrong, you know, but at the same time, if it works out, then I'm kind of know my package and I know what I'm going to do and know things that I should adjust and stuff like that.
You're a guy, you race a lot, and we talked about Triple X. How difficult is that at times to kind of balance that at the racetrack of being Colton from Triple X, but also you're Colton Heath driving for a win at that night?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, you know, I feel most people kind of understand that, like, if they needed something, they've come after the race.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
If there's, you know, I have a little trailer, but if somebody really needed something, you know, I have a lot of stuff in my little trailer. I've raced out of 20 years. I got her pretty.
Mike Brown can attest.
Yeah.
I got it set up to where, you know, if a guy needs something and nobody around has it or something like that, and they come, you know, that part's fine. You know, it's and it helps to be at the track running the same thing as guys that run Triple X's around here. So when they do have questions, I can be like, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is how, you know, I feel. This is how I feel that you kind of need to do things. And either whether it works for them or not, that's just, you know, every driver is different. But it's a. I think now, at first it was kind of like I was, oh man, you know, I'm trying to race. Don't bother me type thing. You know, I felt like when I was younger, that was the mentality I had on it. Right. Now that I've done this for a while, you know, I feel like, you know, at the end of the day for me, I want everybody there to be good and succeed and want to keep doing this. And like, cause in a roundabout way, we're in a pretty like niche market of thing in a very isolated area. You know, to where, you know, you want everybody to come back and want to do this and get more people into doing this and stuff like that, to where, you know, if I can lend a hand anyway, you know, that's just what I'll do.
I mean, we appreciate that because you're right. We are. That's what I've had to tell, you know, coming from the Midwest for pretty much my entire life outside of living in North Carolina a couple of years. We are in a very isolated market out here. Like, the guys that we have to pull from on a weekly basis are the guys that we pull from on a weekly basis, whereas, you know, Knoxville, Ohio, Pennsylvania, there's always invaders coming in. We don't really have that as much here because we're so isolated from everybody else. So when we hear a team selling out, we hate to hear that because it's like, well, there goes one team, you know. Hopefully that stays local.
And it's hard, you know, to get new people in, especially I feel like here where, you know, in Washington, there's so many things you can do, I feel like, you know, and not that you couldn't do it anywhere else, but it's like, you know, if you want a boat, there's an ocean or a lake or a, you know, you know what I mean? Like, you could do that or,
hike.
Yeah, like, there's so many things that guys could do that, like, maybe necessarily isn't as much of those things. You know, obviously, you could go fishing anywhere or get on a boat anywhere. Yeah. Or like, But it's like, for some reason, it's a, whether it's the cost of living here or whatever the reason is, you know, it's hard to get people that want to come and spend all their money to go racing. You know, it's obviously a very expensive sport and it's tough to do and things like that. But it's hard to find those people, I feel like, now, as much as, you know, I feel like, I don't know, I guess, like, if you had, I don't know the answer. If I knew the answer, I could be rich, right? But it's just, it's tough. You know, my wife's cousin, for the first time ever, came to the races last year in, I think it was like the June 8th race or something like that. And he came to the race, and he never been here. Lives in Mount Vernon, has a farm in Mount Vernon. Never been to the racetrack. Lived there 5 years, right? He finally got him to come to the track, this and that, and he's like, oh man, this is awesome. Like, this is the greatest thing. So he came for like a couple more weeks, and I think he ran Dirt Cup, and the midgets were there and the sprint cars were there. And he was like, man, I want to do this. You know, I want to, you know, he was ready to go 410 outlaw racing like tomorrow. Right. And I'm like, well, that's not real realistic, but you know, so what we did, you know, what he really was like, man, I'd like to try one of these midgets, you know? And a couple weeks later, boom, bought a midget. And now he's fully hooked into this. Like, he's as hooked, you know, he's way more into it than almost I am, I would say, just because it's new and fun and, you know, stuff like that, to where, you know, it's hard to find those people that really, you know, I think if you showcase it to them and they kind of understand it and, you know, kind of, you got to dedicate your life to it almost in a roundabout way. Right. And just trying to find those people to get them into it and want to do that. So
who was that?
Steven Massengale.
Oh, there we go.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
64.
Yep.
So, this weekend, Hall of Fame night at Skagit Speed, we'll be inducting Dave, Bill, and Paul Lemley. But how have you seen Skagit Speedway evolve throughout the years?
Well, in the past couple of years, it's evolved a lot. But it's just, you know, from what it was when I was a kid going there to, I would say I had that, this is like your backyard racing sprint car type thing, right? To where we are now, where almost every weekend it's an event, right? It's a, you know, people are everywhere, you know, stuff's happening everywhere, lots of cars, you know, stuff like that, to where, you know, I wouldn't say it's a whole lot different as far as racing wise, you know, is the track's a little bit shaped different than what it was when I first started and things like that. But, you know, the race trackish part of it's the same, but just as far as, like, you know, last weekend for the fireworks show, I got to break and be in the infield watching, you know, for like, and I don't get to do that. Hopefully, you know, I try not to do that very often. and you look up and there's so many people there, you know, and they're all, you know, obviously, we all know that the fireworks are a very big part of this, but you know, it's, you get all these people there, you know, if 10 of those people want to pursue racing, that's huge. Right. Yeah. And they come and they see that the place is like a first class facility and stuff like that. And people want to do it. You know, now I take Steven, who's new to all of this. Right. And go to these other tracks where he races his midget at other tracks. And he comes every time he comes back and he's like, man, we're like spoiled with Skagit, you know, like this is, and I'm like, dude, this is like top five, like in the country track, you know, it's just, we're way up here, you know, and
that's,
but you know, it's, I never raced there when the Lemleys were like in charge of it. Okay. I only raced basically like Deming is like my biggest, like Lemley, I would say, memory and racing with them and stuff like that. And I still go to Deming all the time and bullshit with Paul and me and Bill comes by here and we bullshit and give each other shit all the time and, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, they were big into my beginning career of like learning racing and stuff like that and being at Deming.
I feel like we've got that connection back. It disappeared for a while, but I feel like the Deming to Skagit connection, we're really starting to see it. I mean, you've got a lot of customers in the Sportsman Sprints of drivers that have just bumped up in the last year or two from Deming, which is really cool that we can kind of have that ladder back in place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice. You know, like I would say California has the best like feeder system. You know, cage carts, whether it's quarter midgets cage carts or micros, you know, there's all these feeders. Well, I really are only feeder from that, like, you know, quarter midget to you know, say your quarter midget or go-kart to like a sprint car, like you need something in between there.
Yeah.
And Deming fills that void, but it's like the, you know, it's the only one. So, you know, it's just getting people to go run Deming to then be able to come be sprint car guys or midget guys or whatever, you know, just to come be at Skagit, keep that going.
You had mentioned the different configuration of Skagit Speedway. Did you ever race on it when it was kind of egg-shaped?
Yeah, my first 2 years, something like that.
What was that like to race on?
I would say to me, I don't really remember it because I was young and the coolest thing ever was just to hold it to the floor and try and pound the fence. And, you know, that was like, you know, so it wasn't, I look at it differently now, you know, now that I've done this for a while, you look at it a little different, but I definitely remember it being a lot tighter. You know, it was the 3 and 4 was just that little bit different to where now they're close to the same. I wouldn't say they're exactly the same, but like they're closer to the same now than what it was.
I got to ask you completely off the wall question here. We're going to change gears real quickly. Your mom is awesome. Carla, we love Carla. She's a badass. She's done it all. Could she beat you in a race? Because she was a pretty good racer in her day.
No.
Oh. I, prime Carla Stewart.
Yeah. Did she tell you she was an asphalt racer?
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
You know, so that's, she probably beat me on asphalt probably.
She's done it all. I mean, she's raced, flagged, officiated. She does our sales here at Skagit, and we don't have an empty board in the place right now.
I always remember I would be quarter midget racing, and next thing you know, she's on the flag stand running, the, you know, doing flag and all my quarter midget. I'm like, where did you come from?
Oh, that's good.
You're
good.
Was there any thought for you for going pavement racing, or were you always set on the dirt?
Yep, that was solely my dad's plan. I can tell you that. He was not about getting dirty. He was not about having to clean stuff. That was not the trailer that I actually race out of now. Yeah. We've had it for 22 years now. We race micros out of it, but that trailer was solely bought with the intention of putting like a late model in there.
Oh,
like it was that was the plan. We were going to go late model racing this and that. And I came from quarter midgets where you ran mostly asphalt, but then there was some dirt stuff that we did. And I was always like, man, the dirt stuff's awesome. I love the dirt, you know? And so then the next step was going to Deming. And so we started running like 250s of Deming and then did the micro or the 600 thing. And after that, it was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing pavement. Like, this is what we're doing. Like, this is awesome. So it was definitely a turning point in that as far as what the plan was, you know, the 10-year down the road, this is what we're doing. Well, that just, you know, 180'd real quick when we started running Deming. And then now my dad's, you know, I would say he's okay with the change.
Have you ever made a pavement start?
Not really.
Okay.
You know, I've ran Bandoleros, Legends. I don't think I've ever drove a late model. You know, I've done some midget stuff on asphalt. None of it's ever been really good for me. I don't think I've ever gone out there and been like, you know, I'm either good, so we should try this, or, you know, it's always, I feel like I struggle just the dirt aspect of it, trying to dirt track it all over the asphalt. It's not the way to go. So it,
you mean you aren't sliding a pavement late model?
Yeah, no. You know, and you know, I'm not really into all that body work. You know, I watch these modified guys every week have to, you know, pound out body work and stuff like that. I'm not into that.
We're a little easier on the sprint car side of things.
Yeah.
You're upside down, you put a new wing on.
Yeah.
All right, Colton. Well, with that, thank you so much for joining us on the On the Gas podcast. We really appreciate your time. This has been a really fun conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Colton.
Yeah, no, yeah, thank you, guys.
Welcome back. Hope you guys enjoyed the chat with Colton Heath. I really enjoyed our chat there we had with Colton, and he'll be back on Saturday night for Doyle Guffey's Rally Auto Sales Hall of Fame night
at Skagit
Speedway with the Lemley family. We'll have a special interview with them that you guys will be able to download on Saturday morning. If you're just listening to this one, we'll have another kind of bonus episode for you guys with Paul and Bill Lemley. They joined us the other day here at the racetrack. But they're going to be inducted in the Skagit Speedway Hall of Fame. Well-deserved. And Hall of Fame night, all open wheel with the 410 Sprint Cars, the Sportsman Sprints, and the CGE Garage Midgets. 410 Sprint Cars, Trey Starks is hot this year. No, but yeah. Jason Solwald just doing what Jason Solwald does, hanging around there waiting for that gap. And he just – he's going to kill you with podiums, and now he got a win, which is cool to see. But Jason just always in the mix, a super smart race car driver that never really puts himself in a bad situation.
I mean, that's the way he did last year. Besides two races, Jason is yet to finish outside the top five. There's been two times where he hasn't finished outside the top ten, and it was Dirt Cup, I think Thursday and Saturday, I believe.
I think he was 11th on Saturday at Dirt Cup.
So, I mean, the epitome of consistency at Skagit Speedway.
How about the battle, though? Third, fourth, and fifth.
Robbie Price,
third, 137 back. Then a tie for fourth at Jesse Schlotfeldt and Justin Youngquist. A pair of guys that both have 410 wins here. And Robbie has pounded on the door of getting back into the victory lane with the 410.
He spent some time off. He wasn't here with the 360 last week. Should be back with the 410. I think it'll be really fun to watch him come back. Maybe that little bit of time off.
Yeah, a little refresher for him.
Yeah. Racing and sports, but racing and everything, it can be such a mental game. And sometimes, you know, just a little mental refresh can make a big difference for Robbie Price, who has been very fast at Skagit Speedway.
And Levi Klatt, sixth in points. He's been impressive as his rookie year in the 410. Eric Fisher, seventh. Chase Getz is eighth. Cam Smith, ninth. And Greg Otis rounds out the top 10 in 410 sprint car points as we head into this week. The Sportsman Sprint points battle is the one we're keeping an eye on. Because
so fun.
You got to be in the top 12. We've got four RaceSaver engines to give away at the banquet.
Yep.
And you got to be in the top 12 to be eligible. So that's kind of what we're watching is that top 12 battle. And right now, Justin Jacobson
Here's owner points for it.
Yeah, because we've had a couple drivers swapping around, but Justin Jacobson right now leading it in the Lyle and Brandy Woods car. Reese Getz second, or the Reese Getz owned 88 car second. Jaden Whitney. They flopped the points lead a couple of times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bollinger, Nita, Macy Logsdon's car, Kier Zylstra, Dustin Gehring, the 19 Berries of
Alden Ostrom. Tanner Merritt, SPP racing car. Brian Serrano, 44J, is Jalen Serrano there, 10th. And then Zan Miller and Ronald Stratton's Jackson Stratton, 45, rounds out the top 10 or top 12 in owner points that are going to be in contention for that drawing. But the driver points are
awfully as close, too. I mean, Justin Jacobson, Jaden Whitney swapping the lead, like you said. I think Jaden had it last time Swarties were here. Justin has it back. He's got two wins. Stephen Hendrickson. Ties him for the most wins in the class at two as well, and he sits third in points.
Yeah, and he's only 9 points ahead of Macy Logsdon. Macy, a winner this year, our rookie leading candidate for Rookie of the Year. Kira Zylstra just has been super consistent. She's fifth in points.
And then Jaden Whitney sitting in second.
Yeah.
You know, he was knocking on the door and finally picked up a win, and I think you're going to see him as a driver just continue to take off and improve in this sporty class. And it's, I think you and I have talked about how fun of a class this is to watch at Skagit Speedway because of the young talent in it, the good racing, and they all race hard but clean.
And clean. And you look at the sporties as a good way to kind of gauge what the future of Skagit Speedway looks like. You look inside the top 10 in points, and it's just littered with drivers that we fully expect to be driving 360s and 410s in the next couple of seasons. So that's exciting. And then the CGE Garage Midgets, they're back for the first time since Dirt Cup. And Shane Smith kind of controlling things. But Ryan Orchard had a phenomenal Dirt Cup. He gets his first career Skagit Speedway Midget win on Thursday and then backs it up and picks it up again on Saturday at Dirt Cup. And now he's roped Shane in to 2 points, so one position. And a couple of weeks ago before Dirt Cup, it was like 40-some-odd points.
That's got to be the most fun you'd have in a weekend, to pick up your first win and then pick up a Dirt Cup win. And
do it in front of that crowd again on Saturday night. And Nick Evans is
I don't know
just,
how you have more fun in a race car.
No kidding. Nick Evans is third in points, and Nick's a guy that's done a lot at Skagit Speedway through the years. 360 starts now into to the midgets and been super good in that. Chad Kincaid got his first career win on Friday at Dirt Cup. That was neat to see.
It was two first-time winners
on
two different preliminary nights, which I think was really interesting. I don't know the last time that's happened, but I would imagine it's, you know, not a common occurrence.
Yeah, and Brad Pritchard was fifth. That's a guy that you had a chat with that we'll have an interview up here in the coming weeks on
Brad
our YouTube channel.
Brad and his son.
Who's going to make his debut this week.
Supposed to, anyways.
Yep. Alex Peck is sixth in points, our defending track champion. So it's been a pretty competitive class. You look, Tristan Thomas back eighth in points. He's missed a race, but he's got a pair of wins, still eighth in points.
Yeah, and Tristan Thomas has been a really fun guy to watch. It's amazing. He's got two wins, which ties Ryan Orchard now for the most in the division. But it's amazing when you look at that points battle. Missing one race is the difference between, you know, sitting second in points versus sitting, you know, ninth in points, kind of a roundabout way, or being up, not up farther.
Yeah, you had that one race back in there if he's got perfect attendance, and he's contending
he's
for the
up there,
probably
yeah.
leading points or contending for it. But that's how it goes. It's been fun. It's going to be a big weekend at Skagit. If you like the open wheel cars, the sprint cars and midgets, you're going to like Saturday night. Hall of Fame night. We'll have several Hall of Famers here. Yep. It's going to be a fun night, great night. And keep in mind, we are off next week because Clay Cup's happening up at Deming. So if you're looking for some racing next weekend, head on up to Deming Speedway, take in Clay Cup, and then we're back the following weekend, the 25th and 26th, with Summer Nationals or 360 Nationals, Fred Brownfield Memorial. That's going to be fun. We're expecting a big car count of 360s.
We've already got a lot of cars registered.
We're already over 20 registered, and I have to think we're going to eclipse 5360 sprint cars on Friday and Saturday. So we'll have the Hornets as well, and we'll have a good field of Hornets. But we'll be 75-plus cars in the pit area for two classes.
So
that'll be – if you like car counts, you like good racing, and big money. Keep in mind, Fred Brownfield Memorial 360 Nationals presented by Bob's Burgers and Brews – or Brew. Highest-paying 360 race in the world.
26 G's.
So – there's a lot of money on the line, and we're really trying to grow that event. And we figure, you know what? Make it the highest paying 360 race in the world. Let's put ourselves on the map.
And if you want just to wet your whistle before they get here, the SCCT has Speed Week leading up to Bob's Burger and Brew.
That starts next
Saturday.
Can
watch it on
CaliDirt.tv.
Yeah. Or just follow live timing wherever you
I think a lot of
that.
a lot of our drivers, or not a lot, but several of our guys are going to run, if not all of it, a good portion of it starts down at Chico, down at Silver Dollar Speedway
Something like that, Saturday night.
But they'll make their way up. But you'll expect to see a lot of our Skagit guys at least joining for maybe Oregon on, some of them the whole swing. But also keep in mind, if you're listening all over the world, you can watch us on Saturday nights live on our YouTube channel. Just make sure, we ask you subscribe. That helps us. Subscribe and like the stream, because that helps us kind of get in the algorithm. And we're keeping that free. We want to be free to you guys, but it's a neat way to showcase Skagit Speedway if you can't be here. We go live right around engine heat, so usually about 5:30-ish local time. So just check out Skagit. Make sure subscribe. If you hit the bell there, it'll let you know when we go live. But check out our YouTube channel. We've got a lot of content on there. You've got a lot of content to me that I'm trying to sporadically get up there and trying not to hammer you guys with eight videos a day, but we've got a lot of content, and Eric's done a killer job going out and getting interviews. We've got 10 questions, several driver interviews, Hall of Famer interviews all going up here in the next couple days.
Some fun Hall of Fame stuff for this Saturday, too.
Yep. Yeah. Make sure you get subscribed, hit that bell so you get notifications when we post a video. We won't spam you. I promise you that. We try to space them out, but we do appreciate you subscribing and liking our videos, because that does help us out.
Well, Blake, gates open at 5, racing starts at 7, cars on track about 5:30 for Hall of Fame night at Skagit Speedway.
Get your tickets online, skagitspeedway.com, or give our office a call. We're here till 6, 7 o'clock, but if not, leave a voicemail or email us, info@skagitspeedway.com, and we can get you helped out there. But it's going to be a big night of racing. Hall of Fame night, you mentioned it, gates 5, racing at 7, and we'll do the inductions after heat races.
Yeah, about that, or about whether we have to run a B-man or not.
But,
before we go, want to give a quick shout-out and hope you're doing all right. Brody Ferguson was involved in a scary wreck last Saturday here at Skagit Speedway. I've been following along on Ferguson Motorsports on Facebook. Sounds like he's getting better, but we want to send all our best wishes out to him and hope that he has a quick and speedy recovery, and we'll see him back in a car soon, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Brody's been a guy that's kind of done a little bit of everything this year, which
has been super nice. Kid, too.
Very good kid.
Good family.
We're hoping to see him back sooner rather than later, but as you mentioned, Ferguson Motorsports, two words, give their page a follow, check them out. They've done a lot of posting. And
I think there's a GoFundMe going for him, too, as well.
Had surgery earlier this week, but it sounds like in good spirits and up and moving around already, so that's good to see.
Yeah, so shout-out, Brody. But other than that, that is all for us on this edition of On the Gas, presented by Skagit Speedway.
And keep in mind, your feed's tomorrow. We'll have a bonus episode for you this week with a Hall of Famer. So two for one this week at Skagit Speedway.